A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. All right. Welcome, 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 everyone. Ladies, gentlemen, and everyone in between. This is Tony's Political Ramblings. And so I'm going to issue my first trigger warning for any of these episodes. We're going to talk about common sense gun regulations today, and a lot of that is going to involve going over the issue as it stands. We're going to talk about homicides, murders, suicides, and gun violence in general. And I know that this topic can be upsetting for some people, so I just want to put that up the front, at the front of this episode before we go into more depth. So anyway, this is obviously a very, very contentious political topic. It's been the subject of many debates for decades at this point, and has been one of the big culture war issues and single vote issue, and one of the single issues that create the most single issue voters in the nation, right up there with abortion. And so I think it's important to look at where we stand today in the United States in terms of gun violence. The trends are not very good. They're not very positive. All of them seem to be increasing. All of the deaths by guns, generally and even categorically, they seem to be increasing. The number of deaths, willful, malicious, or accidental, in the United States in 2014 was 12,418. In 2020, that number was 19,411. The number of teen deaths teens injured or killed by guns in 2014 was 2,318, and in 2020 it was 4,142. The number of deaths from mass shootings in 2014 was 269 people. Now, in 2020, that number is 611. That's over 200% increase in deaths from mass shootings in 6 years. This is an issue that is getting worse across the board. And it's, and in terms of deaths per year in the United States, if you look at the leading causes of death in the US, it's up there with some of the more common ones that you hear. So far in 2021, a total number of gun violence deaths of all causes, by the way, all of these stats have come from the Gun Violence Archive, which they pull data from 7,500 data sources daily to report on gun violence deaths. But so far, through 2021, 41,308 people have died from gun violence in the United States. And that puts it in the same neighborhood as people who die from the flu and pneumonia at 49,000, and nephritis, nephrotic syndrome, and nephrosis at 51,000, and puts it just behind diabetes at 87,000. So when you look at this, gun violence is a disease. It's a systemic disease that's killing tens of thousands of Americans every year, and it's killing more Americans now than it was even 5 or 6 years ago. This is a disease that's getting worse, and it's killing people. It's killing family members, it's killing friends, loved ones, neighbors. It's the same people you go to the grocery store with. This is affecting everyone. And so how do we get here? One of the most decisive Supreme Court cases related to this was District of Columbia versus Heller. And that was a Supreme Court case that was a challenge to the District of Columbia's stricter gun regulations and that they were putting in place to cut down on gun violence. And basically, the ruling was found by the Supreme Court in the early 2000s, that the Second Amendment is defined as the right to keep and bear arms without any militia-based background. And that's one of the biggest points of contention, is that in the Second Amendment that I read at the beginning of this episode, there is a reference to a militia. However, the current ruling by the Supreme Court indicates that that militia piece is not relevant, and that individuals are entitled to have weapons for self-defense, to keep in the home, however they'd like. But that right is not unlimited, and that is in the majority opinion in the Supreme Court ruling from District of Columbia versus Heller. That right is not unlimited. It does not mean that anyone can have access to a gun at any point in a, given any circumstance. So then the question becomes, if gun violence is such a prevalent, prominent issue that's killing tens of thousands of Americans on an annual basis, what can we do to further regulate it, the purchasing and possession of firearms to protect individuals from their likelihood of being killed by guns, but also respecting the Second Amendment as it is interpreted by the Supreme Court? That's the question that we all have to grapple with. Now, for one, we can just look at what the states do. Some states have stricter gun laws than others. And there was a study conducted that I'm going to reference here, where research was done on different states and different gun laws to see how the use of requiring a permit and the banning of large capacity magazines was associated with higher or lower deaths by gun violence. And the study found that state laws that in the states that require the purchasing of a permit in order to buy a gun, there was a 60% drop off in mass public shootings in terms of the odds of that happening. And in terms of large capacity magazine bans in those states, there was a 38% fewer fatalities in those mass shootings than in states without that ban. So if there were to be a mass shooting, there'd be about 40% fewer people dying in it than they would be without the large magazine ban. And so when you look at these laws at the state level, just simply by requiring a permit, you cut down the likelihood of a mass shooting, which is different than other types of gun violence, but you cut down on the likelihood of a mass shooting by 60%. 60%, that's a very significant number. That's almost 2 out of every 3 mass shootings you're really not having anymore. And in terms of the severity of it, if you have a ban on high-capacity magazines, 4 out of every 10 people who may die as a result of a mass shooting are no longer dead at the end of the day. 4 out of those 10 people get to live. 4 out of those 10 people get to follow their dreams, to pursue the life that they want and not end up in a body bag. This is significant. And so that's promising. On the state level, there are some states that have these stricter laws. And so now the question becomes, what other laws and limitations and regulations on the Second Amendment are there that, again, respect the interpretation of the Second Amendment as it stands today and respect individuals' rights to own firearms, but also work to keep us safe? What other limits exist? The first is the Cool Off Act. And the Cool Off Act was introduced to Congress in 2019, and it basically proposes that federally, so that means nationwide, there would be a 3-day limit if someone wanted to buy a gun, in certain circumstances, of course. If someone wanted to buy a gun, they would have to wait 3 days in order for them to buy the gun. So it would be as if you placed your order and then you had to go pick it up 3 days later. And this was based on a Harvard study that was conducted and found that when there was a cool-off period, as they call it, between wanting to buy a gun and actually getting a gun, they found a 17% drop in homicides and a 10% drop in suicides. And again, that's significant. Out of every 10 people, who would die via homicide, two of them are no longer dead. And by suicide, one of them are no longer dead. That is one out of every 10 people who now get another shot at life. Another chance to turn things around that they would not have had before. And to me, this one is really one of the easiest ones to put into place and one of the ones that makes the most sense. It's, you know, if you can't wait 3 days, what are you trying to do? If you need your gun in less than three days, you're probably up to something and you probably shouldn't have it. And so the next piece of regulation and limitation of the Second Amendment right comes in the form of dealing with domestic intimate partner homicides. One of the most shocking things I found looking into this was that one half of all women murdered in the United States are murdered by their current or former intimate partner. More than half of those deaths are done by firearms. So there's a very strong correlation between domestic abuse and domestic homicide, and homicide and murder of intimate partners. And oftentimes, more often than not, it's women who are on the other end of the gun. And so there is a current federal law in place that prohibits the purchase and possession of firearms from those who committed and who were convicted of a misdemeanor domestic abuse offense. And that's good, but there are also a lot of loopholes that exist, and they are as follows. But some states, in that sense, don't require existing guns to be removed from domestic abusers. So someone, let's say, who already had a gun prior to being convicted of a misdemeanor domestic violence offense does not have to give it up if they live in a state that doesn't enforce that law. And a lot of these laws only apply to spouses, especially in the state level. A lot of these protections apply to spouses and don't necessarily apply to partners, non-married partners. And so that's another piece that that comes into play here. There also aren't any protections against stalking. Stalking with a firearm. And one study that I'm going to pull from here found that 76% of femicide victims and 85% of attempted femicide victims experienced stalking within 12 months of their homicide or their homicide attempt. And so there's no protection against that. It's very likely, if that stalking with a firearm were to happen, that the woman that is being stalked ends up dead within 12 months. And there's no federal protection against that. And so by creating a law that would make that a crime and a criminal offense and to seal up some of those other loopholes by creating stronger federal regulations in terms of taking away guns that are already owned by domestic abusers, that would go a long way to cut down on these deaths. And to protect victims of intimate partner violence. So, to tie this all together, District of Columbia versus Heller established that the Second Amendment allows individuals to own firearms without there being the component of a militia, without any kind of organized element to it, but that the right was not unlimited and it could be regulated further. So, the question, as we've sought out to answer, is how can this be regulated further while still respecting the individual right to own a firearm? We found that state laws that require permits and ban high-capacity magazines drop dramatically the rate of and severity of mass shootings. We found that things like the Cool-Off Act and closing the domestic violence loopholes and the federal level can really cut down on the number of homicides, suicides, and intimate partner violence, and intimate partner homicides. And by moving these policy pieces together and creating a sort of network, a fabric that acts as protections for people.